Okay. All right. We'll attempt to get started. Welcome to the Windows and Azure-centric data management session. So it's a joint presentation from Microsoft and Commvault. And we're going to cover, you know, Mike Opel will start it off and cover Azure from a Microsoft perspective, you know, a little bit reinforce on why it's important, a little history and where they're going. I'll then come up and talk about how to effectively use and define data management, including cloud, and using cloud as a cloud target. And then we will take my old-fashioned ways in on-prem and hybrid using storage and go to the young city slicker, David Ngo, to talk about and show how we're using Azure as a compute engine and in more of a hybrid mode as well, but actually taking more advantage of Azure compute. So we'd like to take it, you know, if we can, as we're going here, maybe a little bit Q and, you know, mixed interactive as we're presenting here. But we'll kick it off to Mike Opel, who will introduce himself and begin the session on from a Microsoft and Azure perspective. And Mike can begin to kick it off.
Thanks, Randy. And I think there might be some
little history on who
we are. Yeah, I'd like to give you the forward-looking statements here. I think we kind of have to do, but I'll let Randy, maybe you do this as your...
Yeah, this is just so if we say something, nobody can get thrown in jail tomorrow.
Yeah.
But a little background on Mike Opel. He can kick off here.
Yeah, thanks. Sorry about that. So my name is Mike Opel. Thank you very much for coming, guys. I work for DPE out of corporate, and my job is to kind of help with a lot of our alliances in terms of as they shift from being an on-premise to being a cloud provider. What's the business model that works, and how do we best make that business model work for you, kind of our end customer? Commvault's one of the companies I'm very lucky to work with. I've been at Microsoft about 2 years, so I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, but I'm not totally blinded by it yet. I'm still in that good spot, right? I am a lifelong sailor, have a Coast Guard captain's license, and that's actually me sailing right there. So with that, maybe Randy, to you.
Okay. I've pretty much noticed three things at Commvault. I'm the old guy since I've been here for 21 years. A little bit, you know, architecture, especially in the beginning of the product. I led our decision to build Commvault from what used to be on a Unix and Linux platform onto Windows. And that's been probably the biggest bet we made in Commvault history and the most successful, which enabled us to begin a partnership with Microsoft. So I'm the old guy, I'm the Microsoft guy, and I'm also the hockey guy, which we can talk about that after the session, which passes us on to David Ngo.
And let's go back here.
Go back one.
Yeah. And I'm David Ngo. I'm a director in our product management group. I started off at Commvault Engineering, been here 16 years, so I'm not that young. I can't play hockey at all. So while Randy tries to get me to play, get on our hockey teams and do events, I'd rather race cars, so that's me. I ran our Windows Client Development Group, and today I'm responsible for our technical partnerships, Microsoft being the most important one. So hopefully I'll be able to give you some information about Azure VMs later and how to work with them that you'll find interesting. Yeah. So thanks.
And the sessions, as Mike presents the frame and the foundation of Azure and the importance, we'll come up with some slides and then a lot of live demonstrations about how to use and how to optimize the environment. So with that, we'll pass it on to Mike.
Thank you, sir.
You can run.
So one thing I want to do today is talk, kind of take it up a little bit of level. So it's great to have everybody here at TechEd. As everyone knows, Microsoft's kind of in a moment of transition where we're coming from what we were, which is a lot of on-premise, to being a cloud-first, mobile-first company. So I wanted to share kind of why we're making that shift a little bit, where we see the market going, and as importantly, talk about why we see Commvault as a really key part of how we're going to get there. You know, as Randy likes to mention, about 10-some-odd years ago, they made a big bet on Microsoft technology. And I think when I get done explaining kind of how we see the world of cloud and of mobile, you'll understand kind of why we're making a big bet basically on Commvault now. So what is happening right now? Really, it's the perfect storm. Now, the perfect storm, aside from being an outstanding movie, is sadly becoming a slightly overused marketing term, which is kind of a bummer to me. And the reason why is the perfect storm is a personal story for me. I actually live in the town of Manchester, Massachusetts, which is directly next to Gloucester. As you remember, the perfect storm, the movie, is about the sword boat Andrew Gale. It came out of Gloucester. I got stuck in the huge storm in 1991, what we called the Halloween storm of 1991, way before it became the perfect storm, and sadly, all hands were lost on the boat. What made the perfect storm so perfect and sadly so deadly for the crew of the Andrew Gale was that it wasn't just one big storm and it wasn't just a bunch of little storms. It was the way the storms came together and the way they amplified each other's impact that made it so dangerous and so deadly. And what's interesting is we're seeing the same thing happening right now in the world of technology. There are several factors that are coming together, each one magnifying the effect of the other, and that's what's driving the rate of change that we see today. So what are the kind of legs of the perfect storm? The first one, all good presentations need to figure out where the Where to point? There we go. The first one's an easy one, right? It's what you've got in your pocket. It's if you've got your iPads out right now. It's devices. So in 2003, we had about one device for every 10 people on the planet Earth. Obviously, we went through the mobile revolution, iPhones, whatnot. In about 2008, we had the tipping point where there became more mobile devices on the planet Earth than there were human beings. And it's important to note, when I say mobile devices, I mean internet-connected devices, not necessarily just phones, things that are connected to the internet. We had that tipping point. As we reach 2015, we see it much larger. And we get to 2020, you see that number go up to 50 billion. All right? This is IDC numbers here. While phones and tablets are important and they're going to continue to grow, what's going to drive this incredible shift, where now we're 10 devices for every one person on the planet Earth, isn't phones, it's not tablets, it's not computers, it's the Internet of Things. It's what Cisco calls the Internet of Things. It's all the things around us being connected to the Internet, all of them collecting data, interacting with each other, and hopefully all of us smartly building our architecture to leverage and understand what that data is doing. The best example of this, quite honestly, is my mother-in-law. So my mother-in-law she's always had the Lexus RX SUV, is like the car she's always had. Every 3 years, she goes and gets a new one. She got a new one just before this past Christmas. And this Christmas was the first time I'd seen her, with the car. So we pull up in front of the house where we're doing Christmas, and there's this beautiful black, RX Lexus. Lights are flashing, the doors are opening and all this stuff. She's inside the house showing everybody how she can, with her new, now it's a device, how she can interact with that car through her phone. She was literally like, and she's not like a technology person. She was like a paid demoer at a conference showing everybody how it worked. It was like, it was amazing. But it really struck me like how, this technology thing is becoming real for everybody in the world. And what sold her on it was just like the Lexus commercial, where she had flown back from Florida and, flight landed in Boston, right? Flight landed, snow. She had parked on the top of the garage because there were no spots left. So she turned the plane landed, she turned her car on, turned the heat on, the heated seats, all that stuff. And when she got to her car, nothing to unshovel, she got in, put her hands on the heated steering wheel, which is pretty nice, and drove away. Kind of a cool example of, the Internet of Things. The other really great example of this, and I was speaking this last week with a bunch of execs at GE. And GE is a remarkable company because, the scale of General Electric, like the things that they can do and touch and of all our lives is incredible. So obviously all their next generation refrigerators are going to be internet connected devices. So you can check while you're at the store to see what do I need, how long is that milk been in the refrigerator, that kind of thing. That's cool. But one thing that I thought was really unique what they're doing is with their jet engine. So the GE jet engine is obviously a big part of their business. And what they're doing is they are connecting all those engines to the internet now as well. And what they're going to do is, and this is happening now, so the next rev, these will all be out. Once the plane hits autopilot, the engine sensors will interact with the cockpit and the autopilot to make like microscopic little adjustments in the wings to maximize the thrust of the engines, and that's expected to save annually $15 billion for the airline industry. But that's actually like a drop in the bucket versus the real impact, because what it's really going to do is as that plane is flying and something goes wrong with the engine, it's going to tell the ground crew what the problem is, what parts needed, so when the plane lands, the guy's going to be standing there, switch of the plane's gone. And the ability to impact the mechanical problems we have on planes is going to make that $15 billion look like nothing. So really kind of exciting stuff. But when we think about devices, it's not just mechanical devices anymore. It's actually organic objects as well. This obviously is a cow. It is also an internet-connected device. There's a company in the Netherlands called Sparked. And what Sparked does is puts little internet-connected devices on cattle so that the farmer or the rancher can monitor on a daily basis how those cows are doing. Are they sick? Are they pregnant? Do they need extra water? What's their heart rate? That kind of thing. And what they're also doing now is they're able to track with a GPS, basically, so that the farmer can tell exactly where the cows go over time, and they can only put the feed in that area to save them money as well. So we're really seeing a remarkable shift in the way devices. That's why you see Microsoft talking about mobile first. Devices, what's the Microsoft play in this space? We think there's a really big one. So what are these devices doing all day and all night? They are creating data. Lots and lots and lots of data. In fact, each one of those cows creates 200 megabytes of data per year. Just one little example. So when we talk about data, it's important to get some perspective on the amount of data that we're talking about here. So in 2009, the collected data by the human species, meaning from the first guy who drew like a woolly mammoth on a cave up until 2009, which of course includes a lot of internet time as well, right? We had, as a species, had created about 0.8 zettabytes of data, cumulatively, from the beginning of human recorded time. So So a little bit less than a zettabyte. By 2015, that number is going to go up about 10x to almost 8 zettabytes of data. But as the Internet of Things, as devices kind of start to take over, what's remarkable is that by 2020, we're going to see 35 zettabytes of data, a 44 times increase over 11 years versus the entire history of humanity beforehand, right? Now, if you're anything like myself and you see these numbers, the first thought you have is, well, what the hell is a zettabyte? So a zettabyte is 1 billion terabytes of data, okay? What's interesting about that is think of the company Teradata, right? Very cool company. When they started that company, they chose the name Teradata because a terabyte was like a lot of data. It was like an impressive name. Like, you know, they need to go back to the drawing boards and get a new name, unfortunately, now. So that's the first reaction I had when I looked at those numbers. The second reaction I had was, Houston, we've got a big data problem. Now, big data is clearly the other overused marketing acronym over the past couple years, so I apologize, but it is really a big data problem, which I put in there. And big data, just like the perfect storm, is a totally misunderstood. People just throw the term around all the time, right? So what is big data? What does big data mean, and how are we going to start to kind of address it? I think the best definition of what big data is comes actually from our friends at McKinsey, where it states, big data refers to data sets whose size is beyond the ability of typical software database tools to store, manage, and analyze. I think it's a highly accurate statement. And when I think about the tidal wave of data that we're experiencing right now, and the fact that some firms are going to be able to use that data, understand it, and use it for a competitive advantage against their competitors, those firms are going to succeed. The firms who kind of sit around and don't understand this problem, don't re-architect to solve it, are going to find themselves in some serious trouble, in my opinion. And that is where we come to the third leg of kind of the perfect storm. What's the third kind of mover out there in technology? And that's cloud, the rise of the cloud. Make no mistake about it. You know, the era of software as a service, of cloud computing, has arrived. It's not coming. It's not going to be here in a while. It's here today. I mean, you've all seen the growth numbers of Azure last year of 154%. I got to tour a Microsoft data center a few weeks back, and I was blown away. I've actually never seen anything like it. It was remarkable. And what amazed me was the rate of change. This building I went to was in Dublin. The building cost $1 billion for the building, $1 billion. And they can't talk about the number of servers, but it's measured not in thousands or 10,000, it's in millions, right, in this one building. They built the building in 3 sections, starting in 2009. So they're going to build 3 identical sections to complete this building. They learned so much building section 1 that for section 2 they used a whole new plan. And they were able to get like 40% more compute with less energy in that same exact space. They learned so much from building 2 that when they went to put the third addition on, they again scrapped the last 2 plans and they have double the capacity with less power use just in the space of building this building. That's how fast this rate of change is. And they've learned so much in building these 3 segments that they are now building another one across the street, which is going to be twice the size of this original one. And when they get done, they're just going to demolish the old one and build another brand new one. Because it costs more to try to retrofit what was there starting in 2009, not that long ago, than it is to just build a brand new one. That's how fast things are changing and the scale of which we see our customers starting to leverage the cloud. Because I think if you think about that tidal wave of data, you can't use the same tools and techniques you've always used in the past. It simply will not work with the speed of which the world's moving and the amount of data that we're talking about. And that's why we are so heavily invested in working with Commvault. Because we really believe that Commvault is much more than a backup, you know, recovery thing, but it's really kind of a fabric, if you will. It's a fabric for you to start to manage this data and get a control of it and then start to use it for competitive advantage. So with that, I will turn over to Randy.
Okay, don't leave yet.
I'm not going anywhere.
Okay, don't leave yet. Little background on us. How many folks in the room actually have Commvault? All right, we'll try not to make this a user group presentation, but that's about, I guess, about 33% of the room. So a little background on us. We do have a unique partnership and history with Microsoft. All right, full disclosure, when I led the decision to build our product on Windows back in 2000, coming from a Unix and Linux platform, there were a couple of reasons for it. One, I was fed up with how much resources we had to spend on continually porting our product to the various Unix and Linux variants that were out there. Literally about 25% of our dev staff was dedicated to port. So we said, hey, let's standardize on one platform. That 15 years worth of Windows Server experience definitely put us in a unique, advantageous position to fully optimize Azure. And the Windows Server-like, Hyper-V-like IaaS environment Microsoft has created. But that unique partnership, when we made that decision, there was a couple of big bets. We made a big bet that Windows Server and the environment was going to be able to handle the amount and types of data that we were going to manage. And we didn't forecast and foresee the explosion that Mike predicted, and Mike is showing, and data has shown about how much data is exploding out there, but we knew it was going to get a lot bigger. So we made that big bet that Windows was going to be able to handle that, and now Azure can handle it. And Microsoft kind of made a big bet because they actually took out a pretty significant equity ownership of into Commvault. So there's definitely a good history and good partnership here in the history and where we're going.
And in fact, Randy mentioned hockey earlier, right? So I'm sure at the end he'll talk about some of the charity work that Commvault does using hockey to raise money for kids, which is something is wonderful and something we're at Microsoft proud to be kind of associated with a little bit. But the hockey analogy, and I'm not a big hockey guy, but I'll go on thin ice and maybe you can, if I get too far, let me know, is Wayne Gretzky, right, the great hockey player. When Wayne Gretzky was asked, why are you so good at hockey? How'd you get to be so good? He said, because I'm skating to where the puck is going, not to where the puck is. And I actually think with the way we at Microsoft think about Commvault is that Commvault is in that wonderful spot that they are where the puck is going. When you look at those trends, they're going to where Commvault is. And that's kind of one of the reasons we're so, you know, excited to be in business with you guys and to partner with you guys, because we really think that by enabling their success, it's going to enable your success and obviously our success in the process. So,
Mike, thank you. It's been a great partnership. I wish I could have envisioned, you know, Windows Azure 15 years ago when we made the bet on Windows Server, but that experience is definitely helping us. We do have a belief in using one data management solution, a single pane of glass. Yes, built, you know, full support for the heterogeneous environment, but built and optimized on top of Windows. And again, that's, you know, we have significant experience with Azure. I think we worked with Mike's predecessors, and the first customer we had that actually used Azure was back in 2008, a shipping company in Alaska called Afognak, back before the name Azure was even created. It was called Microsoft Cloud Services. So about 6+ years of experience working with Azure. So the first thing I'd like to do is define data management. Even Mike mentioned Commvault, backup. You hear that every time. David and I have heard that for too many years. Lenny is in the back, has been here for 20 years. We've heard Commvault backup too many years. What we've defined is data management. Backup is an important aspect. And as cloud comes in and as tiered storage comes in, the definition of data management is getting a little more crystallized. It's kind of coming to where we defined it years ago. So from a backup and recovery perspective, yes, it's full disaster recovery, including being able to smartly manage virtual machines. And Dave will go into a lot more detail on that. It's granular recovery. Can I recover individual messages, items, individual files? Can I search for things? Tiered storage. All right. The old way to do things was backup to tape. Well, tapes got expensive. How many folks here send tapes to Iron Mountain and places like that offsite? All right. We want to get out of that game. Is there a way to use an offsite storage location that's safe and maybe take advantage of the cloud? We'll discuss that and show that a little shortly. But data management is also archiving. All right. We've seen customers that have 7-day retention times. That's all they want to keep data and email for. We have some that have infinite. All right. Some countries in Europe have 100-year retention time, basically the lifespan of an individual. So the retention times change. So how can we archive that older, less used, and sometimes larger data off to secondary and less expensive storage? All right. Can we take advantage of cheap SATA disks? Can we take advantage of Azure from a cost perspective? All right. And still meet compliance requirements. And again, still be able to search by content. It's funny, Mike talked about cave drawings and back in prehistoric times as part of that 0.9 zettabytes for the first, you know, up till 2009 in times of humanity. Well, how can we get data and make it very easy to move forward? We'll take some demonstrations of that shortly. Encryption, deduplication. If you're not using Azure yet, you're not using cloud, you will be in the next 2 to 3 years. It's going to happen. The cost dynamics of where they are, where it's less expensive than tape. It's easier to manage than going to tape for offsite storage. But you're putting your location in your data in a multi-tenant environment. So other companies, other competitors are also storing data there. So how you store from a safety perspective and what we call encryption becomes important. Well, we follow the compliance guidelines and work with Microsoft, so when we move data into Azure, we use encryption keys. But those encryption keys by default remain on-prem. So all the data you move up there is very, very safe. No one else has access to it. So a very important point is you start to use cloud. Where are your encryption keys kept? How is your encryption scheme set so you can take full advantage of your environments? There we go. Sorry about that. All right, reporting. We have about 200-plus MSPs that utilize Commvault as their data management offering for their customers. We count that as one customer. Rackspace would be a classic example. All right, numbers of these MSPs use Azure as the back end. So reporting and chargeback about how to monitor that becomes critical. So that's also part of data management, which Simpana provides. Replicating, and I don't want to steal too much of David Noh's discussion here a little bit, but being able to replicate and have quickly the ability to spin up your environments, maybe in Azure from an on-prem scenario, become very, very critical. This is all part of the Commvault definition of data management. It's not just backup and recover an individual machine. And optimizing your remote users. More and more people are tethered. I have a machine in my own. I have two labs. I have a Surface. I have a laptop. I have a workstation in the office. I have a server in the office. So it's four different machines I manage. So being able to manage for myself all the data I have access to and making it very easy, maybe making it search capable, is important. So this is our philosophy. And we have decided to build a single solution called Simpana, as opposed to a lot of other folks out there going out and acquiring different disparate products. I'm guessing if you don't have Commvault, you probably have two, three, four, five, or six of those logos that are up there. So you have four, five, six different copies of your data. We've decided to use simply Windows Server and or Windows Azure as our platform in which to build Simpana, a single solution that does all those things as opposed to a myriad of products. And that's why I believe our Commvault customers have an advantage. One single solution. We'll get into some demonstrations shortly. So let's talk about data tiering. All right. The standard way folks are doing it for years and years and years, going back to those cave dwelling drawings, are disk to tape, backup, maybe archive to tape, and I'll take those tapes and put them off site in case something happens to the building. It works. It's okay. It's worked for many years. It will continue to work. A little bit more modern way was disk to disk. All right, disk prices are getting down. It's a race to zero for storage costs today, especially in the cheap SATA world. So I'll just go disk to disk and have a secondary copy on site. Faster, maybe a little easier, I don't have to get involved with tape robots and so forth, and that works. Take full advantage of that today. They'll go disk to disk for that quick copy and then move it off the tape. So I'll have a tier, maybe we'll retain data for 7 days, 30 days on site on disk, and then we'll move longer term off the tape. So still get off-site storage protection for disaster recovery, but still get enable quick restores. Where Microsoft changes the game is using Azure as a tier. All right? This is where all compute and storage initially locally is here, but you can actually back up or archive on-prem to disk or actually send the data up to Azure. All right? So we can use Azure from a simple blob store, REST connection, and move data into Azure. I am very complimentary of Microsoft and Mike. Very recently, they've announced something called ExpressRoute, where you can get that 10G, 100G-like network speeds to the Azure cloud. So you can actually move a lot more data and a lot more effectively now. That takes advantage of the optimization and speed performance that we have. So using Azure as a tier is important. Matter of fact, the demonstrations I use will often include Azure, where we bring data back and forth to and from Azure. So that's key. Eliminate tapes, less expensive, and I don't have to worry about managing all that different disparate media. All right, and that includes all the benefits I'm sure you've heard over the last few days of geo-replication and having four or five or six copies in Azure. We seamlessly work with that. We've worked with Azure and what was called Microsoft Cloud Services many years before it was called Azure. So all the features of Azure are automatically integrated with Simpana. And Model 4 starts to hint on where David's going, is using Azure as the workload for Simpana. All right, if you have Simpana now and you're used to running everything on-prem, well, those components can also run in Azure. So I can put that media agent, that heavy data mover, in Azure. I mean, I can manage data in Azure and maybe move it on-prem. I can manage data on-prem, move it up into Azure. So you have the freedom and flexibility to put those resources where you'd like. So our definition of backup, archive, and recovery. A, we will index it on the fly. So when we move the data, index it. Very, very helpful, especially in the case of SharePoint. We'll give an example of that shortly. A lot of magic around virtual servers, all right? VMware, Hyper-V, but something you'll see called release independence. And this is important. There's a sea change going on. We heard about it for the last 3 days here at TechEd. A lot of folks are taking more advantage of Hyper-V. They're either directly migrating to Hyper-V or they're adding it plus going forward, and I would too, features, the functionality of Hyper-V. And the cost is kind of interesting. If you got Windows Server, you get Hyper-V for free. So why not take advantage of it? So a lot of our customers said, hey, how can you help me? I have to keep data for 3, 5, 7 years. So everything we back up, everything we archive, no matter where you put it, from VMware, can be moved to Hyper-V. That can be at the volume level, that can be at the file level, it can be at the machine level. A lot of feature, a lot of functionality there in helping. And you'll see release independence during some of the demos here. We talked about encryption. Deduplication is critical. All right, we will deduplicate the data on the fly, which means you're going to move a lot less data over the wire. This becomes critical so you get storage savings on the back end. So if you have 1 terabyte worth of data, maybe with Commvault dedupe, you might have, in the case of the Microsoft Office Products Group, which gets about a 91% deduplication rate, you can take 91% of that factor and just that's your storage cost in Azure. So significant deduplication benefits here. And enables what I call a zero disk growth paradigm. Your data is going to continue to grow, but your storage costs will eventually start to get zero as you start to age data off. And compliance and e-discovery is key. How many folks here believe they work for a company that has some e-discovery or compliance requirements for themselves right now? All right. If you work for a company that makes a dollar worth of revenue, you pretty much work for a company that's under some compliance guidelines because you have to be able to electronically refute. If a customer comes back and says, you promised me $7.5 million if you promised me the widget by Thursday, but I never got it, well, you've got to electronically refute that and actually say, no, this is the actual case. So everybody's under some sort of long-term storage and compliance guidelines to some degree, whether it's Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, HIPAA, Sarbanes-Oxley, et cetera. And how many folks here use Exchange or O365? Well, that would mean every piece of data in and out of Exchange, which sets up our first demonstration. So I'm going to use some pretty much on-prem stuff using Azure as a target around Exchange, SharePoint, and AD, which I would call a basic 101 old guy hybrid environment. So here's my mailbox. And I've been at Commvault a long time. I mentioned 21 years. So I'm your IT guy's worst nightmare because I got about a 41 gig mailbox. I do that for two reasons. Yeah, I got a buzz. Two reasons. One, I like to stress our system to the point of, you know, how large are these things going to be? That's what I tell everybody officially. That's what I tell David. Real reason is I'm a spoiled brat like everybody else. I like to save everything. So let's go to the bottom of my mailbox. And I have this email from a lady named Cammie. And I got it back in May of 2004. So 10-year retention period here. And I'm going to tombstone this message, completely remove it from Exchange. Now, this is the old-fashioned way that I would say Commvault enabled data management, backup, and recovery for Exchange. Completely gone. All right? So we'll come to the Commvault interface. Browser-based interface, and this is the on-prem version. Take a memory shot of this one because you'll see it running in the cloud shortly with David. I can manage all my servers, all my tablets, all my machines, all my applications from one single location. So we'll go in and manage Exchange at a very granular level. I want to browse and recover. When do I want to see the data as of? A week ago, a month ago, I'm just going to take a look at all of it. So all of the mailboxes become available to me to manage. I'll go into my mailbox, and even the Outlook Office extended information like contacts, calendar items, which are also e-discoverable compliance requirement search and recovery, come up for me available to manage as well. I'll go into my inbox, and there's a ton of messages. All right, and I'm simply going to sort by age. And there's the third oldest message from Cammie from May of 2004. I'll designate it, make the restore request. I'm going to put it back right where it came from. So as a user, I'm still logged in, reading, writing, sending email, doing what I have to do. The administrator in this case, and remember, this is the old-fashioned way of doing things. The administrator said, all right, find a message in Randy's mailbox from May of 2004 that was backed up by Commvault on Exchange 2003. Eventually, that data was put into Azure. Find that individual message, recover it, and I got a little MiFi device here, see the little purple light, connect to the internet, find it in Azure, put it back into his Exchange 2013 mailbox. So the release independence even goes to the application level. Now, I like it when our customers aggressively upgrade to the latest version because there's more APIs that Microsoft has created for me. I have a lot more toys to play with. I can offer a lot more features. So while I was talking about that, the message was restored back in my mailbox. And this is obviously a live system. So single message recovery, administrator level, Exchange 03 to Exchange 13, and I used Azure as my target. Pretty basic. I call it Commvault 101 data management capabilities. But a funny thing happened on the way to the forum. All right, a lot of our customers, a lot of our administrators said, you know, I had other products before Commvault. I could never do that. Or it used to take me days or weeks because you used to have to create the old server, find it, drop it to a PST file, walk it across. 3-4 days later, I was able to finally get it. First couple weeks of using Simpana, I was a hero. 6 months later, it got a little out of control. I became a very popular administrator. Can you, as Commvault, enable my users to recover and manage their own email or their own content? Even before the term self-service IT came about. Because I don't want to get into this 50 to 100 restores a day. They actually want to manage their data more effectively. So we came up with the idea of what we call Content Store, which enables the user to manage their own data. So all the mailboxes, all folders for on-prem or Office 365 Exchange are here live and ready to go. All right, and you see here I have 3 copies of this message, room at SPC. We added a set of folders called Content Store, which is all of the email that I have that's been backed up, deleted, archived, are also available to me now. In effect, the Commvault storage target is an extended EDB available to the individual end user. I can open up this message, I can reply to it, I can forward it, but I cannot change it, nor can I delete it. It is an e-discovery capable, ready to go set of data. It cannot be changed. But I can take this message and drag it into my inbox. Remember, I had 3 copies of it before. I go back, I now have 4 copies of that message. So very simple management now at the end user level, enabling the users to have access and manage their own data. We didn't have to get the administrator involved. So that's the more modern way that we've had. And the folks here who have Simpana 10, you can turn that on for your mailboxes right now. All right. Let's jump over to SharePoint. I'll do 2 more demos here. Bunch of data here in SharePoint. And since the topic, and I'll get a little nervous here, let's take Azure V4. Simple PDF. I'm going to delete it. Send it to the recycle bin. I'll go to the recycle bin, and I'll drop it out of there too, just so everybody knows it's been completely removed from SharePoint. All right, back here, no Azure V4. We'll come back to Simpana. I'll close down my Exchange management, and I'll go to SharePoint. Now, for the SharePoint, for the Commvault customers in the room, for V10, we listened to you. We heard you very loud and clear. The farm level recovery took 8 or 9 mouse clicks, all right? That was too many. We've had it made a little easier. So if you go to your database level now, you got to click on that, you'll see the farms come up, and you actually get the farms right away, so it's down to 2 mouse clicks. But in this case, I want to do some granular management, and I'll browse. Same exact screen interface. So if I'm running, if I'm managing SharePoint, Exchange, Windows, Linux, Oracle, it's the same exact interface. I don't have to learn something new because it's a new app. I'll scroll down. Got a couple sites here. Here's my Microsoft folder. Now I could right mouse click, do some searching, which I'll do in a second, but I actually see the Azure V4 here, so in order to save time, I'll just click it. Make the restore request. Do I want it to go to the same or possibly a different SharePoint location? I can move data around. Question?
How often do you want to restore private?
Oh, true. There we go. Thank you. Didn't see it. Oh, I would have brought it back. But so Azure V4, make the recovery request and put it right back where it came from. So I've shown Exchange. So in SharePoint, while that's kicked off, and again, I'm bringing the data back from Azure, one other one at the server level is Active Directory users and computers. All right, and especially in the case of SharePoint, which tends to extend and tweak the schema in AD, I'm going to give myself a promotion. I'm going to change my title in Commvault, and I've always wanted to do this. And I never have lived that fantasy out of being a Zamboni driver. So I'm now the Commvault Zamboni driver. We'll come back. Manage Active Directory. By the way, the SharePoint restore just completed. We'll come back to SharePoint, refresh the screen, and my Azure V4 PDF is back. By the way, that was SharePoint 10 backed up, recovered to SharePoint 13. Again, release independence is an important theme here. We'll manage Active Directory now. Browse. Again, same exact screen interface. Let me take a look at everything. Every object and every attribute becomes available to me to manage. Go into users. I can recover the entire object with SID, security ID information, or in this case, just the one attribute. Make that restore request. While that recovery is coming back, I mentioned we can index everything as we move it. And that's the key, especially in the case of SharePoint. People don't know file names anymore. They just know the descriptions of what these items are. Luckily, our user may remember if they're Excel, if they're PowerPoint, if they're PDF. So everything that we moved is compliance cert set. So I'll log in, and this can be set off at the group level, individual user level, so I can only see my data, or HR, legal discovery, enterprise-wide search. And with the topic of the day being Azure, let's just take a look at search for Azure. I'm going to search Exchange, SharePoint, and my file system data, bring all that data back. Matter of fact, the Azure V4 document that was in SharePoint is right here. So I actually get an HTML preview, which substring matches about Azure. And from here, I can actually do a deeper dive, more e-discovery, legal discovery, HR hold kind of capability. I could recover this. I can move it. I could restore it someplace else. Doing this all based on content search. And this also includes, I see here I have 86 emails. Some other folks have emails with them as well. I can bring up an email over at Azure. So I can manage all of my data. Going back to Mike's point about it's managing the data. That's what we're doing here, is enabling the management of data. Meanwhile, our Active Directory recovery completed. We'll come back to AD. I will refresh the screen again. And unfortunately, I am no longer the Zamboni driver. The attribute in AD has been reset. So it's showing very quickly how to manage your entire enterprise at a granular level, as well as, you know, even easier to do full disaster recovery. The last piece I'll show is how easy it is to add Azure to Commvault. For your the existing Commvault customers, if you're under capacity licensing, you have this capability now. There's no additional charge to use Azure as a tier with Simpana 10 and tiered storage. I'll go into library and drive configuration. Here's the name of the server I'm working on. And very simply, I want to add a cloud storage library. And I'll call it Azure at TechEd. It's a new device. Simply click on Microsoft Azure Storage. And as soon as Mike Opel gives you your Azure credentials, you can begin using Azure as a tiered store, whether you want to go disk directly to Azure, or disk to disk to Azure, or disk to disk to tape to Azure. You can immediately begin using Azure as a tiered store, all from an on-prem location. So here's the beginnings of your hybrid environment. All my on-prem data I can actually put into Azure. But Azure's this wonderful Windows Server environment up there. I wonder if there's things I can do with it once I get there. That's a pretty interesting concept for these new guys. Come back to PowerPoint. So in summation from my side, Azure Storage, Azure Compute. Number one place we're seeing Azure Storage today is tape replacement. All right, that's going to change as more Azure Compute models come in, but people are replacing tapes. Makes a great archive target, and especially for granular capabilities. I just showed you the ability around Exchange and SharePoint, managing lots of little things. As ExpressRoute comes out and those 10G and 100G speeds come, even more opportunities are available to me with Commvault and Azure. Disaster recovery, virtual machine disaster recovery in Azure, another interesting concept. I don't know anything about that because I'm an old guy, so I'm going to have to give these young whippersnappers the time to talk about that. For the existing Commvault customers, one of the more unique ways, and I wish I had thought of this, but I had not. A couple of customers came up to me. And the ER file for the emergency recovery of that CommServ, a phenomenal location to put it, is in Azure directly. Because when you do that, you can spin it up right there. I wish I had thought of it, but that's one of the use cases I'm seeing more and more often. All right, and something about that next bullet about running in Azure, but I don't know too much about that because I'm an old guy. All right, as I mentioned with the geo-replication, seamless integration with Azure, and first customer we had used Azure since 2008. So with that, the old guy is getting tired and old because I only know this on-prem stuff. So I'm going to pass it to the new generation. Let Dave know. He's going to talk about some of this new stuff that I know nothing about.
Watch your step, Dad.
Thank
Here,
you.
Kane.
Thank you, sir.
So,
like 15 minutes.
So now you guys have gotten a little overview of what we do on-prem and some of the capabilities we have. But and a lot of that, some of that you may be doing today with your current data management suites and products. But as you consider what Azure or how Azure fits into your overall IT infrastructure, that brings up questions of how are you going to manage VMs that you bring up in the cloud, workloads that move from the cloud. What are you going to do with those? How do you store data from that and make replicas that are easy to manage as well as cheap? And then how do I handle my deployments of Hyper-V on-premises? And if I am deploying Hyper-V on-premises, what do I do with my older virtualization software, which we won't talk about? But they are all things that you need to consider when moving to a hybrid cloud solution, and even if you're just moving to Hyper-V as a virtualization target. So let's talk a little bit about some best practices and things to consider when moving to Azure. Okay. Whoops. Let's skip these here. Okay. The main thing to consider, and I'll talk about best practices a little bit, and then I'll actually show you a deployment of Simpana in a hybrid cloud scenario. So the first thing to consider is, and not everyone remembers this, is WAN is the key. And that's where ExpressRoute is so important for hybrid cloud deployments in particular. A dedicated network link is almost always required. What people forget is in their data centers today, it's very easy to add another gigabit card to your server. Oh, I need another gigabit of bandwidth. Sure, no problem. I have an open port on my switch. Throw in the card, no problem. And you go to your network provider and say, hey, I'd like a gigabit network connection to Azure. And they say, great, that's $200,000 a year, right? But that's something to consider, right? And you have to watch out for that. But ExpressRoute and makes it possible for you to actually leverage these high bandwidth connections where before you were subject to the unpredictability of the general internet. So you get a lot more value with ExpressRoute now for your dollar with those dedicated network links. So if you're looking at a hybrid solution, I strongly recommend that you look at ExpressRoute for that. VM sizing. When you look at VMs in Azure today, how many people have actually stood up Azure VMs? A few of you. Okay, not that many. So I'll show you a little bit of the Azure management portal here. And you'll notice that when you go through the Azure portal, you get to pick what VMs you want. Oh, I want a small VM, I want a medium one. Actually, now it's A0 through A9, right? And you look, you say, oh, this is great. I've got some memory and some CPU. That's terrific. What is not immediately obvious, especially when you're looking at data management, okay? When you start thinking about, hey, I need to back up the data that's on these servers, how do I set up some infrastructure in Azure to do that? What you don't realize immediately is the amount of storage that you can have per VM locally is limited, and network throughput is also limited depending on the size. So even though data management, back recovery, archiving, that is not CPU bound, right? You say, oh, okay, I don't really need a lot of CPU. I'll just allocate a small instance. The small instance is limited to, I think, 200 megabits for throughput. So definitely keep that in mind when you're looking at VM sizes and sizing your data protection strategy there. There are two main types of storage in Azure to consider, okay? There's blob storage, which everyone talks about today, right? That was the initial implementation of Azure Storage. It's object-based. You can talk to it using REST protocol, using HTTP. Give Azure Blob Storage an object, and later you say, give it back to me. Everybody's happy. Cheap and fast, no problem. In the VM space, there is an entity known as an Azure Disk, which is very, very cool. An Azure Disk is a VHD that lives in Azure Blob Storage. So you pay the same rates as Azure Blob Storage, but it looks like a disk to your VMs. Okay. And this is particularly interesting in a data management solution, and the reason is because if you want to send data from your VMs in the cloud or on-prem to Blob Storage through a VM in Azure, remember I said that network throughput is limited, you're sharing that bandwidth, right? Inbound data into the VM and outbound data to Blob. So while Blob Storage is an excellent choice, you have to be careful of network bandwidth considerations when choosing Blob Storage over local Azure Disk. Azure Disk, the caveat to Azure Disk is today you can only have up to 16 terabytes of disk attached to a single VM. So these are considerations to keep in mind when picking and choosing your strategies. Randy's slide where it shows disk to cloud can apply to Azure infrastructures as well, where you go to local disk first for speed, and then move that to Azure Blob for longer-term retention. So definitely keep that in mind. And finally, this is a general rule of thumb, right? Particularly important in hybrid cloud. Keep the first data of your copy close to its source. That means if I'm doing a if I really want to manage my hybrid cloud environment as a whole in a holistic manner, you want to set up your policies and your backups and other data movements so the first copy of that data is nearby. You want your on-prem VMs to back up primarily to something on-prem, right? Some limited amount of disk. It doesn't have to be a lot, but enough to keep that first copy of data for fast recovery. And if you're working with Azure VMs, you want that first copy of data to stay in Azure. Once that's done, fine. Go ahead, cross-copy over the WAN, but you want to avoid those network throughput issues over the WAN for your primary copy. That being said, we do have some customers that do their first copy directly to Azure. There's no problem with that, but you have to plan for it. I talked a little bit about VM performance. This gives a couple illustrations. This doesn't obviously include A8 and A9 instance sizes because we didn't know about A8 and A9 until 2 days ago. But you can see where like an A4 instance has 8 cores, 14 gigs of RAM. You can have up to 16 terabytes of disk. Each one has 500 IOPS. That's a general rule of thumb. Right, so what you want to do is you want to stripe across those disks for performance to get higher IOPS. And once you look at A6 and A7 VM sizes, then you're starting to look at, you have the same data size, but the throughput is actually much higher to the disks. And again, the reason why the throughput is higher to the disk is because disk traffic on a VM to a virtual disk goes through a different network interface. Okay, it's not bandwidth limited. It actually goes through the physical host that the VM is on itself through a different path. Compute instance size to bandwidth, I mentioned that before. You can see it goes up quite a bit as you go up the VM sizes, right? Anywhere from 100 megabits per second all the way to A7 at 2 gigabits per second. The interesting thing is when you look at a VM, everybody will tell you that you have a 10 gigabit connection, no matter what. Hey, I've got 10 gigabits. No, you don't. So, okay. Let's switch over and take a look at a couple demos. So unlike Randy, I am actually dependent on the internet for this. So we'll see what happens. So I have an environment in Azure, all on VMs. Let's fire up the mouse here. And I'm going to connect to it. It's actually on a virtual network in Azure. So these VMs are pretty well protected. They're natted behind a virtual gateway. And there's a great technology called point-to-site networks. And that allows you to connect using secure sockets tunneling to talk to that virtual network. So all I have to do is connect. It's certificate-based. Definitely, I won't spend much time on it, but it's a fantastic feature. And hello. There we go. My auto hide is not behaving well. Interesting. So while my Surface reboots, we'll try that for a moment here. Actually, Randy's on 3. So like I said, live demo on the internet. Never know what's going to happen. So some of the things to think about also with performance on the VMs, right, is that there are limits also in Azure storage. You have storage accounts where the data is kept. And for Azure disks, when you want to maximize throughput, what you want to do is you actually want to spread those disks across storage accounts, particularly as your environment grows. And the reason is because IOPS on each storage account are limited. So if you create too many Azure disks, too many VMs in the same account, then you will encounter a performance bottleneck. The trick there is that you have to use PowerShell to do that because you can't create virtual disks through the portal without on different accounts without it. Okay. So thank you, Windows 8.1. The reboot was very fast. If it'll ever log me in. So talking about the environment a little bit I've got here, it is a full deployment of what's supposed to look like a production environment. It's about 28 VMs, 28 or 30 VMs, I believe. And it actually has, and it's got a domain controller, it's got Exchange, it has SharePoint, it has Oracle, it has Linux, and all of these things are managed through Simpana. And I will switch in just a moment. Okay. So, as I was saying, we're going to connect to the private network here using point-to-site VPN. There we go. Let's fire this up. Okay. Look familiar? This is a VM running in Azure. This is exactly, because we are entirely software-based, you can install our components anywhere you want, which gives you a lot of flexibility and a lot of choices. In this case, I have a server running in Azure, controlling all the Azure VMs, and an on-premises VM as well. So I'm actually doing the reverse, right? Most people like to have the primary control on-prem, and then control Azure VMs as a separate domain within that data protection scheme. Actually have it backwards for fun. Why not? So if we look at the Azure Management Portal, let's log in here quickly. Let's take a look at some of the VMs that we have created here. So I mentioned before that I have different storage accounts for the VM data disks. And you can see these spread across here, 1 through 4. If we look at these, we drill down a little bit into the storage itself, you'll see that I actually have data disks here, and they are incremented by 4. And the reason why that is because I have some PowerShell. And if you guys would like some of this PowerShell scripting, I'm happy to share it with you. I see some nods. Happy to do it. It is the worst code I've ever written, so no guarantees there. And so I'm actually using, I actually use this script to go through. I want 16 data disks, each one of them to be a terabyte, and I want to attach them to a particular VM across certain data stores. Now, one thing to keep in mind, there are no disadvantages to attaching a terabyte disk to Azure, to an Azure VM. There's no reason to be afraid of the cost, because Microsoft won't charge you anything if you don't put anything on the disk. And that's actually a nice distinction for Amazon. Amazon, with these types of disks on VMs, will charge you. If you allocate a terabyte or 16 terabytes, they will charge you for 16 terabytes from the day you turn it on. Azure disks will not. They will only charge you for actual capacity used on the disk. So I say, allocate away, have fun. 16 terabytes, let's go and have a party. Right. So using some ugly PowerShell, I've attached disks to these VMs. We can actually look at a couple of the VMs here. And this, Dingo Azure MA1, is what we call our media agent. Our media agent is what talks to the actual media disk or tape or cloud. And I have 16 disks attached to it here. So if we look at the VM setup itself, here are my resources. I've created client groups so I understand what each client actually does, right? I have an on-premises group, I have Active Directory and Exchange and everything else. If we look at some of the policies here, we look at some of the libraries, I actually have a library created in Azure. Right, so what Randy showed you before with allocating a target in Azure for storage, that's created here. I also have a library that's created pointing to Azure Disk, so that's essentially local disk for performance, for ultimate performance, I should say. And I also have an on-premises library. So that VM that's being backed up controlled by this Azure instance is backing to an on-prem location first. If we look at some of our policies here, the most interesting one is actually this one, the on-premises policy. Let's bring this up here. So the on-premises policy has two copies. The primary copy is going to a local disk, but the secondary copy, where Randy was showing you the tiered copies, that goes to Azure. That copy is actually accessible directly from any other media agent that we have, whether it's on-prem or in Azure. So again, what I told you about some of the options you have with flexibility, we give you all options. However your data is distributed, we let you put storage near it and protection near it. But it's important to plan ahead of time so you don't shoot yourselves in the foot. Every data type that Azure supports today is protected here. Active Directory, so a domain controller, I've got Exchange 2013. I even have an Oracle server. So this is relatively new for Azure, where you can allocate a virtual machine that has Oracle pre-installed on it. How do you protect it? We can protect that for you here. I have a Linux VM here. We have multi-platform support for our components. So if you have allocated a bunch of Linux VMs in Azure, it's very simple to protect those as well from the same console. So again, we give you quite a bit of flexibility in how you want to deploy. The important things to remember from an Azure perspective are performance considerations for storage and bandwidth considerations on the VMs. Other than that, I encourage you to create as many VMs as possible. Play with them, especially with MSDN credits. I think everybody gets $150 worth of free Azure. Absolutely explore it if you haven't moved any workloads to the cloud, or if you're considering moving workloads to the cloud. Absolutely allocate those VMs and come talk to us, and we're happy to help you figure out how to manage those assets. Okay. And with that, I'm going to turn it back to Randy.
He had to wake me up because I fell asleep because I'm an old guy. So I just want to go back to one slide we had up that we kind of went through quickly. This is kind of the environment we started with. Private data on-prem, moving data into Azure, and now David's showing you more of Hyper-V. Well, a lot of our customers have multiple cloud targets today. Amazon, obviously one of the ones, and a lot of folks have VMware, no question. So how do we manage that since we have multiple targets? One example we want to talk about with cloud, and you know why we're very bullish on Microsoft as well, we had another cloud vendor about 9 or 10 months ago. We had a few dozen customers on it, and they had some high-speed connectivity, and they were using this target as a storage area, and we got a phone call from them about, I don't know, 7, 8 months ago, saying, hi, just to let you know, we're going out of business in about 3 weeks and shutting the power off. Good luck with your customers. Seriously. All right, company's called Nervonix. You may have heard about it. So executive call to executive call at Microsoft, hey, we need help. What do we do with these three customers? David Noe wrote some really more bad code about how do we accelerate the use of, you know, we got to move a lot of data, you know, terabytes of data, multiple terabytes of data from Nervonix into Azure and keep our customers consistent. So that release independence game that we had with Exchange and older versions of files and moving VMware into Hyper-V came into play very effectively because we moved that data directly into Azure. So the customers remain consistent. So the ability for us and the experience we gained about moving data between cloud targets was heightened in a very, you know, a short 3-week window about moving dozens of customers over. So the customers today, back when we had on-prem, when you had that initial slide with the 5 or 6 EMC products, the 5 or 6 Symantec products, the dozens that the CA has bought over the years, that same paradigm is going to hold true when you start to come into cloud. What do I do with all these types of data? I'd like a single location to manage it. David's showing you how to manage it from Azure. I'm the old-fashioned guy managing it on-prem, but we can coexist and live very happily together in one world today. So what we see is no need to wait for IT anymore. All right, you want to keep the data available by 7x24. We can move all the data from Amazon, manage it in Azure, take the VMware, take Hyper-V, take Unix, Linux as well. and simply use Azure and the VM capability, the Windows Server Mode capability, as the place to do your selective archiving, your content-based indexing, your e-discovery. And again, Azure makes a nice landing place for all that. And Azure provides us the compute capability on the back end to do a lot more magic as you get into BI, as you get into long-term search. And that's really where I see Microsoft having a huge advantage, is on the compute side, as well as just the tiered store area. So with that, we have about 14 minutes left. Open it up to questions and answers. You can, you got the panel here, so fire away with questions. Good.
When using Azure as a target for your DR, is Azure the one handling the encryption of the target, or is Commvault handling the encryption of the target? Where's the keys kept?
So for DR purposes, that's actually a good question. So Azure is highly secure in of itself, right? The data is obfuscated on storage. Each disk is encrypted as well, and there are people with guns at the doors, right? We don't have guns. We use so for us though, over the wire, we transfer both using SSL, and of course, great, everyone's happy about SSL now, right? But we also encrypt data from on-prem. So as you're moving data from on-prem to the source, we have encryption keys that protect it from your perspective, right, from someone who might get access to the storage somehow, which would be very unlikely but possible. And then Azure takes care of physically securing the storage once it lands there. So there are multiple levels of security, multiple levels of encryption. Our keys are kept with the CommServ, which is usually on-prem.
Just to add on to the physical security, as I mentioned, I was at the data center recently. I was actually kind of amazed. So I'm a Microsoft employee, right? When I was booking this little tour we did for a few people, they wouldn't tell me the address of the data center. Like, I work there, right? And I'm like, well, how are we going to get there? You know, they're going, you tell us where you're going to be, we will come pick you up. So they come pick, you know, us up in their little bus, and we drive to this place, and there's an actual moat, a physical moat around the building. And the moat is designed to prevent tanks from being able to breach the facility. So you drive over this little bridge. The bridge can support the weight of a truck, but at a tank, it collapses. Right? And then you're like, oh, and when you get inside, I mean, it's amazing. But it's also a no-fly zone. These are actual FAA no-fly zones over these facilities as well. So it's a level of security that's it's hard to even, you know, comprehend when you get there. You know what I mean?
We're actually doing, we usually do seminars and so forth and events with Microsoft. We're actually using these facilities as like way cool places to talk about our products and how we work together. So
yeah.
You can talk to us about where we're scheduling those because they are amazing. David kind of mentioned, you know, the armed guards. He ain't kidding. I mean.
Yeah, so when you go in, it's, you know, like you walk in, right? I mean, this is months lead up, by the way. To get in is very difficult to do. And then when you, like, you know, you walk in, so there's like a, you know, bulletproof glass, you know, bank teller kind of thing, right? You hand them your passport. They take the passport. You go into a little, you know, like in the airport, these little things, but it closes. So you walk in, the door closes behind you. You're in the little glass thing, and they say, yeah. All right, that's you. They open it. They let you in. I mean, it's remarkable security, quite honestly. It's, if you ever get a chance, you really, just for the experience, it was awesome.
Yeah, and as I mentioned back at the, you know, we had the college level here with David, the kindergarten level for myself, the encryption keys by default with Commvault are kept on-prem. So that's what you want to do. Now, we do have an option where if you want to put the encryption keys where you put the data, some Fed situations, I have seen that, we have the option to set that as well. But by default, and the way most of the world works is keep the encryption keys on-prem. Your data is safe, cannot be touched. Mm-hmm. From an encryption point of view or from a physical point of view. Mm-hmm. Encryption usually leads to the question on deduplication. All right, and we dedupe prior to movement. Now, no offense to our friends at EMC, but very big honking boxes called data domain boxes in Avamar, which are Linux-based targets, and you usually got to buy them in pairs, and they're six figures each. They are basically deduplication machines. I kind of like the Windows Server as a deduplication target for heterogeneous environments. Simple, you know, six-figure Linux box versus a simple Windows Server. No offense to Microsoft. Not that there's anything simple about a Windows Server, but it's a heck of a lot less expensive than one of these big honking Linux boxes. So I do like the idea of heterogeneous data management deduplication to a Windows device because it's a great performing box and it's significantly less expensive than some of the alternatives out there. And again, we like the software-induced deduplication as opposed to the hardware-forced dedupe. We can get into features around dedupe for hours after that, but encryption usually is a dedupe question. Other questions?
All right.
Go ahead.
Sure.
Go ahead.
We still leverage a lot of tape in our environment just because of the length of retention we have to keep things. So we'll do an honest copy to keep for forever. Do you see Azure replacing that infinite retention cost-wise, or is there still a place for tape?
I am not allowed to talk about futures. Especially not ours. Would it make sense? Well, Amazon's got Glacier, right?
Right.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. And
that's cheaper than tape. I mean, fully loaded tape is about what we hear is roughly 2 to 3 cents per gigabyte per month, off-site stored, plus labor, plus rotation, right? All the things that you have to do to keep tape secure. Glacier is 1 cent per gigabyte per month. Currently, Microsoft doesn't have such an offering.
I'm going to couch that a little differently. How many people here heard of Glacier before? Long-term, deep core storage, really, really cheap. Well, we have some customers that used it. One in particular got really aggressive with their retention policies and made some changes on-prem. And when they came in after Friday, after doing this on Monday, several hundred VMs went never, never land. And with Glacier, you can talk to Amazon about how they set it up. It takes a little while to get the data back. So over the next few days, they got several hundred VMs worth of data back because it's deep core storage, but not quick recovery.
3 to 5 hours to first data access.
Yeah.
After you make the first request.
Yeah. Now that was
per object.
But they eventually, got the data back. But what they did not count on, and this is where you really got to talk to Microsoft on pricing, they did not count on an $80,000 bill as part of that recovery. So the discussion about how you architect your long-term data management, and data management will become the buzzword over the next 3 to 5 years because it's how you manage it and how you get it back and how you set it up to access it, to index it, to meet your e-discovery needs. This all becomes part of the equation now. And it would make common sense for a common sense company like Microsoft to maybe learn from those environments and have those kind of options in the future.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. And, out of curiosity, what's your retention period?
It depends, but we have infinite on certain things.
Infinite retention?
I mean,
yeah.
It's the easiest thing to,
Sure.
Okay.
So
some of the patient records, you know, keep until they die,
Right.
Yeah.
It actually works very well. In particular, if you look at storage costs now, they're just continually going down, right? I think Microsoft has cut prices 40-some times in the last 3 years.
It's a race to zero.
It is. It gets back to that data center thing. The speed at which the cost per compute is going, it's going to continue to go down. I mean, Microsoft, and I'm sure everybody else, is relentlessly driving the cost down. So there's absolutely going to come a tipping point. When that moment happens, I'd be shocked if it's not.
I think we're just about there, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, we're still doing the traditional 30 days for 12 months. But we still have 30 days retention online always on disk.
That's fine. Yeah. But and that model would work very well with Azure's target for your tape.
Yeah. The aux.
It depends on how much data you have, of course, and what your RPO, RTOs are for longer term data. So one thing to keep in mind, right, here's one thing to keep in mind. If you have data that you want to store for a really long time, and you want to keep it on cloud storage, and you need to access that data, one option that we can provide for you is full-text content search, right, content indexing. Because in Randy's demo, what a lot of our customers do, they content index that data, and you can do that either on-prem, you can do that in a VM on the cloud, and that way, you don't actually have to pull the data back. Right. What we find with our customers is once they implement content indexing, most of the time they don't pull the data back. They just want to look at the data, find it, and look at it. They don't necessarily want a copy of it to manipulate. Right. And so in a healthcare scenario, that may be something interesting and something to keep in mind for everyone as well, because that's fast. Right. Content indexing is very quick. You identify the data you really need, and then you go wait for it from cloud storage. For a DR scenario, keep in mind that a VM is a great target for restores rather than pulling it all back on-prem over the WAN.
Now, the gentleman used a term early in the conversation called aux copy or auxiliary copy. And the way Simpana works is we'll make our first copy usually to disk first. And an aux copy is making a copy of that to secondary and tertiary and sometimes beyond that storage. From a Commvault perspective, there's no additional cost for those additional copies, but you could take that aux, you could take what you have to tape and technically aux that to Azure as well, and that would work in the scheme. Question?
Now you were talking about the content search.
Yes.
But once you find the content, maybe a document or something, do you have to bring all the backup back? Or
no.
Just that one document?
One document. So, yeah. So that's the thing. When you're considering tape replacement for cloud storage, right? You have to keep in mind, what is it that you're restoring? How quickly do you need it back? And how much data do you think you'll bring back at any one time? Right? If you have, you know, a huge SQL Server database that's, you know, or a big SQL Server database that's 50 terabytes, right? Or 30 terabytes. That's not coming over the wire anytime soon, right? So, but that's something to consider standing up in a VM, because the VMs have much higher bandwidth to Azure than you probably have over the wire.
Now, don't confuse us with some of those other products, because some of those other products will bring back the whole honking database just for that. No, we're just going to bring back that one small piece of data. That's why I did early on, I kind of set the stage with what I call the kindergarten demos, which are the basic messages, SharePoint items, individual attribute stuff. That's what we focus on. And that's why, and I did bring all those back from Azure. So just show, you know, to show that kind of capability. Other questions? I didn't hear the...
So from 9 to 10, the question was for Commvault customers, the licensing change for snaps between 9 and 10, does that affect what we do with Azure? The answer is no. Before, in 9, snaps were completely free, actually. We didn't have a way to regulate that so well. So that's there were some changes around that. We can talk about that in more detail if you'd like. The market demand
yes.
We had for Zen was fairly low.
Yes.
So, yeah. So what we're so either leave it on 9 or in that scenario install agents on the guests.
Yeah. And the 9 agent can obviously work, can integrate. So that's the market demand there was low, and it's also challenging for David and I. Again, we've been here long enough. Lenny's been here long enough. When we were a private company, and we could talk about roadmap. We literally can't talk about anything outside of the quarter that we're in right now. We have very arduous auditors. It's challenging for us. So some of that, you know, might be NDA. We can get into as well, but that's a tough one.
Any
other questions? All right, we're gonna have Lenny come up.
No, I got the best part at all.
Yes, he does. The Xbox One. Where's Michelle? Aw. Who went to the jam sessions last night? All right, we'd usually like to have Michelle take care of all the picking of the items.
So if anyone has any additional questions, more detail, you want to discuss your specific scenario, we'll be in the booth. Get in touch with us. Yeah. Happy to go through those in detail with you.
No, how about you? All right. Yeah, we'll have. Everybody okay with Lenny picking it?
Yes.
Lenny's only been in Commvault 20 years.
So, my friends at the back, we went from 1 in 12 at one point to 1 in 80 chance. So, here we go. Number.
Which way do I read that? I'm a little.
12.
Okay.
Hey!
And as David said, any questions you have, we can get us now. We have everything we saw here. We have running down at the booth as well. Lots of smart guys down there that can cover a lot more detail as well. So
thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everybody, for coming.